The first thing is that it's not just about the person, it's about the politics and policies you bring with you, and that you're committed to doing your best to get turned into real practical action on the ground. So I think from what I've heard of all the other parties' policies, I really believe that the Green Manifesto is really the only set of policies that really begins to address the issues of poverty and austerity that we've suffered for the last 5 years. And reversing austerity and creating an economy that works for the 99% rather than for the 1% is absolutely one of our key three manifesto priorities. And I'll talk more about that in a bit. But I've been reading a poverty audit by an organisation called Academic Stand Against Poverty UK, and they've done an audit of all the five main English parties' manifestos, and they've kind of said that the Green policies are the only ones that they have confidence in that would really tackle poverty and help produce a flourishing society. And I think that that's, you know, a fairly substantial endorsement, and I do see that as one of the most important things that needs addressing. You know, we've had a horrific 5 years of really rotten economic policies that have been all about redistributing wealth upwards to people that are already rich and to privileging big corporate interests. And the people, ordinary people that didn't create the financial scandal and the economic collapse, we're the ones that have been made to pay for it. So that really has to be dealt with. And I think that the Green Party policies are the ones that are really geared to doing that. The other two big things in our manifesto is we think that we need a better politics. We think that the current system, partly the reason why our economy and the state of inequality in our society are so much in need of change is because the political system itself isn't working. And one reason it isn't working is because we have a first-past-the-post voting system that basically gives power to about 250,000 people in key Tory Labour marginal seats. So the effect of that is that general elections boil down to Tories and Labour trying to manufacture policies that will appeal to these people. So you've got an incredibly narrow range of political options coming from the big parties. And so we want to have a constitutional convention from the bottom up that really involves people in looking at how our political system works. And we're going to propose, if that were to happen, we'd propose two main things. And the first thing is that we'd reform the voting system so we'd have a proportional representation system like the one in New Zealand. And it's called an additional member system. And it's been working in New Zealand and several other countries for quite a long time. And it's come up with really constructive, innovative, creative politics that work for the common good rather than any particular section of society, and it certainly doesn't privilege the rich and corporate interests. So that's the first thing we'd propose. And the other thing that we want to do is one thing that we'd recommend in this constitutional convention is that we have an elected second chamber, that we don't have a House of Lords that's got a really key role in passing legislation that affects us all, that's staffed by essentially the great and the good that have been appointed by political parties and who are all old. You know, we need a properly representative elected second chamber. And the other thing about the constitutional convention is we think we need to look really sensibly and carefully at how power gets devolved down, because one of our big political ideas is subsidiarity, which is basically that decisions get made at the level where the people who are going to be affected get to make them. So instead of everything being centralised and top-down, power gets devolved, but it obviously needs doing in a context that's different from now, because if you just devolve it now, you just get the same mess locally as you've got nationally, so what's the point? So, you know, making better politics is the second big part of what we'd like to see happen in the next 5 years. And the third thing is that we're really aware that climate change is going to be disastrous if we don't have really strong policies that are going to keep average global warming within 2 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial revolution levels. And that's going to need two big things in legislative terms of what happens in Parliament. And one is that we need to strengthen the Climate Change Act. The targets aren't tough enough. with the targets they've got at the moment, there's something like a 60% chance that we'll breach the 2 degrees centigrade global average warming and head up to 4 degrees, at which point we're in serious trouble. So we need to strengthen the Climate Change Act, and we do that by aiming to have, I can't remember, it's 80 or 90% reduction of carbon emissions by 2030, certainly totally decarbonise the electricity generation by then. But the big difference with us is that we want to have a zero carbon economy by 2050, which is a much more ambitious target than the Climate Change Act. And that's going to be a huge change, but a really positive change, and it's going to create a lot of new jobs, new skilled jobs that will pay really good wages, and in that way we'll revive the economy as well. So it'll do, you know, it'll be good for the economy, good for the planet, good for people. And the other big thing about our approach to climate change is we recognise we have to have an effective international climate change agreement. And a big stumbling block in that has been how you assign carbon emissions targets to different countries across the world, because, and the issue there is that the Western countries that industrialised early actually have a huge historical responsibility for the level of carbon emissions, because we've been pumping out carbon emissions for 200 years, and because we're rich, we've been pumping out more of them in recent years than other countries, so we have a disproportionate responsibility for reducing carbon emissions because we've put so much out there. So, you know, the thinking is that, the simplistic thinking is that there should be a per capita limit on carbon emissions that applies across the world, and we're saying that actually isn't fair and it's not going to be negotiable because of our historical responsibility. So we're saying that we think we should accept that we should only have half the amount of carbon emissions that's permissible to generate over the next century, so that that gives leeway to countries that have almost no carbon emissions because they're so poor and because they never industrialised, they haven't got any responsibility historically. So it makes it a much more, it's a much better negotiating position, because you're not going to run into other countries saying, but we can't do this and it's not fair. And we're saying, we know you can't do it and it's not fair. And so that's why we're going to do a convergence and contraction thing, which is that we know our emissions have to converge soon and eventually, but in the meantime, a lot of countries, to improve their standard of living, need to engage in energy generation and manufacturing activities that are going to, in the short term, raise their carbon emissions. That has to be allowed to happen, because people need to raise themselves out of poverty. So in the end, we'd all converge, but we're prepared to say, we've got much more responsibility for this than most other countries, so we have to have tougher limits on our own carbon emissions. So those are the two big things that, you know, that we're kind of talking about. So I've talked a bit about why I think our policies are stronger and fairer and more climate-friendly, better for the environment, better for the 99% than any other parties. And I suppose you also need to talk a bit about your personal qualities, because it's not, you're not just a robot that goes and kind of toes the party line. It's like, you know, what are you going... The role of a backbench MP, which is what anyone from this constituency is going to be, isn't just about making sure that good legislation gets passed in the House of Commons. It's also about how you represent your constituents. And I think that I've got a really good understanding that the role of an MP is to represent everyone. It's not just the people who voted for you, it's everyone. And so that means being prepared to go out and listen to people, take people's concerns on board and make sure that everyone gets their due as citizens, you know, regardless of what their political views are. And I think that that's really important. And I think Chris McCafferty, who was the Labour MP before Craig Whittaker, was really brilliant at that. And I was talking to her the other day, I ran into her in the street and we were talking about this. And she said the reason she was able to do it was because she was able to use her MP's expenses to employ 5 caseworkers who did nothing but constituency work. And you can't do that any longer, because the way that members' expenses are regulated now means you can't buy expenses across. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, that MPs' salaries are really, the MPs are really well paid. And I know people, I know I'm not going to end up in Westminster because we're starting from too small a base, but if I were,